All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new and very, very exciting episode of the EITF project. You can tell by how many times I said very that I'm very excited for this episode. We have Yaron Brook with us on the show, and we couldn't be more excited to interview him. We've seen a lot of his podcasts. He's a veteran at this, so he's going to have a lot of pointers to give to us, selfishly speaking. But I think this is going to be a very interesting conversation as well, just in general, how to navigate career, how to navigate life in general. So thank you so much for joining us on the show, Yaron. You can see how excited we are.
Of course, it's my pleasure. I hope to live up to expectations.
Right. All right. So, just to start off the conversation, we start off with a very informal question because we get some very interesting answers to this. So, we start asking about career development and how, life and everything plays into career development. But we would like to know to begin with, what was your, we all have LinkedIn profiles and we all put all our career stuff out there, but it's never, we never get the same answers that we see on LinkedIn for this question. And now after all the hype for the question, what was your first job? And what is one thing that you took away from your first job that you carry with you today?
What was my first job in a sense that I got paid to do it?
Or even something where you didn't get paid, but you just went with it for experience.
The thing I got first for was I used to clean, we lived in an apartment building and I used to clean the stairs, wash the stairs, uh-huh. mop them down. Yeah. And then I used to, and this was the disgusting part of the job, I used to clean the trash cans, the big trash cans for the entire apartment yeah. building. So yeah. once they were emptied, I'd take a hose and water, clean them out, all of that. Very, very unpleasant work, but that's what I did as a teenager to make a little bit of money.
Yeah. And is there anything that you took away from that job that you carry with you?
I don't want to do it. And I better find something much better to do in life because that sucked. Yeah. Generally my approach to work is if you're going to do something, do it well. I try to do it well. And yeah, I don't want to do that. I never want to do it again. And I do as little cleaning as I can in life, other people to do it for me. So that is the main takeaway from that particular job.
I'm very horrible at cleaning as well. My weekends are, grudgingly, there's some time that I devote to cleaning.
It's serve as motivation to make money so you can hire people to do it for you. One of the great benefits of wealth is the ability to delegate all the things you don't like doing.
Yeah.
And it's a huge reason why you should be motivated to make.
Right.
So you talk about wealth. What does wealth mean to you? Because I know it's a loaded question, but how do you see wealth and how would you define it?
Well, at the end of the day, wealth is kind of what I just said. Wealth is the ability to live the kind of life you want to live and to not have to do the things that you really don't like doing. And of course, some people want to go to Mars, so they have to become very, very wealthy to do that. I mean, you need billions of dollars to be able to do that. Other people might have more modest ambitions and therefore the amount of wealth that they need is less. But what wealth is really, it's a financial estimate. It's the financial assets that you have. It's the savings that you have. It's whatever you have that you don't need for regular consumption. It's everything you have that is not required. It's the real estate assets you might have, but it's primarily financial assets that are there. And the purpose of wealth is to allow you to live well and allow you to pursue the values that you need. And some that you want, need, some of those values require time, some of those values require effort, and some of those values require wealth. Wealth is just a reflection of your past effort, but it still requires time and effort. It's just you did it already, and now you can enjoy the fruits of that labor. But yes, what's an optimal wealth? What's an ideal wealth? That completely depends on your values and what you want to do with it and what you want to do with your life.
That's a very interesting answer. And I feel like I can go off on different tangents based on that answer, but I want to step back a little bit to where we started this with your career, right? If someone Googles Yaron Brook, they get a variety of careers that you've been in, right? So say, you've been an entrepreneur, you're an activist, you've been on multiple talk shows, you have your own podcast and you're pretty much everywhere, right? And I feel like each one of those careers is something that people can just take and run with for a lifetime on their own, right? So it's kind of like a curious question for me. Which one of those career paths is your favorite and why?
So the reality reality is that I came late to this career, or to these career paths in particular. I've had lots of careers that are not on Google before that, because they're not as interesting and they're more boring, so people don't know about them. But you know, my favorite career is the career I engage in now. That's why I'm engaging in now. Otherwise, I would go seek something else. I don't believe in going backwards in life. You should always go forward. You should always pursue something better, do better. I guess of the things I'm doing now, my favorite career is to be what I would consider a public intellectual, maybe not as public as I'd like, but being a public intellectual means the speaking I do, the interviews I do, and my own podcast, all of that I view as one career path towards trying to have an influence on the culture, trying to be a voice in the culture, trying to be part of the debate. And so I do debates and speeches, and I travel all over the world to do that. And of course, I do my YouTube show and all of that. And I have written books, and I try to write once in a while, although writing is the hardest of all the things that I do. All of that is part of this one career, which is a public intellectual. You know, the entrepreneurship, the finance, and that's entrepreneurial. Yeah. I'm also involved in a hedge fund in finance. That has always been more of a financial, you know, it's fun, it's interesting, and people I work with are fantastic, so I love working with them. But if I had to just choose one, I would choose the public intellectual. That's where my real passion is. But I enjoy the fact that I am able to, because I have great partners and because I guess I have the skill involved, to be able to do more than one thing at a time. But I spent 3 years in the military. I was a civil engineer a long time ago. I love being a civil engineer. I was a professional student. That's what it means to get a PhD, is you spend years of your life being a student. That was fantastic. I loved that. I was very poor, but I enjoyed it.
Great way to define it.
I was a finance professor. I ran a conference business. I was the CEO of the Ayn Rand Institute. So I ran a nonprofit. I've done all those things, and it's always the latest thing that I'm doing that I'm the happiest with. That's why I'm doing it.
So through your transitions through different careers, what is one thing that you've learned, and what is one thing that you've had to unlearn through your different careers?
Well, maybe it's the same thing. I mean, there are a lot of things, right? There are a lot of things that you can pick that you've learned over time. Yeah, gazillions of things. But one that actually answers both is, and I tell this to young people, don't get fixated on one career, right? Be opportunistic. Have your eyes open both externally and internally. Yeah. Internally, in a sense of introspect about what your values are, what you care about, what you enjoy, what you love, what you really want to do. That can change over life. You don't know at 18, unless, you know, some people do, but most people don't know exactly at 18 what they want to do for the rest of their life. You know, some people know they want to be a doctor, they want to be an architect, they want to be, but even then it can change. I mean, you can look at people's careers, even in medicine, evolving significantly from what they originally wanted. But keep an eye on what you care about, what you value, and then keep an eye on what the opportunities are out there in the world. Yep. What kind of paths can you take? Where are the opportunities in the future? How do I position myself to benefit the most? So there's a sense in which the career you need to choose is to live, right? And to make your life meaningful, to like interesting and fun and productive. And you need to take that seriously like you do a career. And you need to be constantly on the lookout on how to make your life better and how to improve your life. And again, that involves two actions. One is internal and one is external. And you have to engage with both on a regular basis.
I think it's great that you're talking about this, because another important thing that I've noticed is there are a lot of people, including myself, that have kept a certain amount of, like a certain category of careers aside because of what I didn't like about it at the time. But another thing that I find myself doing is researching about how much those have developed over the years, because there's always change happening. So I may find something interesting about it going forward. So I think it's great that you mentioned that we need to keep looking at it internally and externally to see, you know, what we want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was growing up, the idea of, let's say, studying history or philosophy or something like that was unthinkable, right? In my family, you either went to medical school or you went to engineering school. Yeah. And maybe on a fluke, you would go to law school if you were really crazy. That was about it. There was no, anything else was considered worse than manual labor. It just didn't exist in the universe of opportunities. And even though I think I am pretty independent from my family, but you do absorb certain attitudes from your family, from the culture around you. And I was certainly guilty of that. I mean, was I really that interested in engineering? Probably not. I mean, I moved away from it pretty quickly. So I enjoyed it while I did it, but was that really my passion? So I did it because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And that was within the scope of what was acceptable. And one of the things you need to do is break that and really think fresh about not what your mother wants you to do, not what your father wants you to do, not what the culture expects you to do, but what do you really want to do? What kind of life, what interests you, and where can you see yourself in 5, 10, 15 years in terms of making a living and enjoying yourself and really being satisfied with your work? Yeah. And I encourage everybody who's young to go through that process and try to break away from the stigmas that are associated with particular professions or particular lines of work and really look at it all fresh and in an independent way without, you know, it's not really that bad to disappoint your parents. Parents should be to some extent disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know, if they have wrong expectations, then those expectations should be disappointed, right?
Yeah.
And it's your life to live, not theirs. They've lived their lives. They're living their lives. Let them pursue their values. You pursue your values. You don't owe them obedience. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things young people need to really do is be able to truly separate themselves from their families, not necessarily physically, but separate themselves from their families intellectually and from a values orientation, identify their values and pursue a career based on whatever your values really are.
So in your answer, the one thing that sticks out is more around introspection, right? Like questioning, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And sometimes when I talk to people, they tell me it's too hard for me to introspect. So is that an acquired trait or does it come natural to one when you start introspecting to figure out what am I doing and how I should do this better?
Actually, another part to your question, Karthik, is something that I want to talk about, because say there's a kid coming out of school, right? Like for me, when I finished my master's, I was, you know, 20 something. And then I was super confused on what I really wanted to do. So I just followed the path that everybody follows. Fortunately enough, I ended up in a job that I really like. But how, like, say if I had introspected more or gone about that process better, like would that have led me somewhere else? Like, so how do you actually do that?
I think introspection is one of the most important skills we develop as human beings. And it's a skill like any other skill that we have to work at. Yeah. Some people, it might be true because of whatever during their childhood decisions they made. It's easier for them to do as adults. And for some people, it's harder. But if it's hard, then it just means you have to work at it and you have to practice it. And there are ways to get better at it. There are skill sets that you can. I think psychology, rational psychology, one of the things that it would teach us would be how to introspect and how to do it effectively. But it's certainly a skill that people need to develop and need to work on. I don't think it's ingrained in a sense that some people are born with it, but I think it is something that, based on the choices you make as a child, some people might be more attuned, some people repress their emotions more, some people are more open about them, some people are more open about, you know, thinking about themselves. So it's a skill, and it's a crucial skill for living. Yeah. You know, you have to, you feel something. It's really important that you understand why you feel it. Yeah. Feelings are not cognition. They're not telling you, they're telling you something about you. They're not telling you about your response to the world. Don't you want to know why you feel what you feel? Don't you want your feelings to be aligned ultimately with your values? Yeah. For your feelings to be aligned with your values, you have to have an understanding of them. You have to be willing to think about them. Why am I feeling anxious right now? What is going on? What is it about this situation that is causing me to be anxious? Does it make sense that I be anxious? That is, I am anxious. I'm not denying the anxiety. That would be repression. But why am I feeling it? What's causing it? And is that consistent with my values? Is that consistent with the way I want to be? Do I want to feel anxious in these situations? And then the question is, well, how do I change that? Or why am I so excited right now? Why is this thrilling? Why is this so fascinating? Huh? You know, what is it about my values about this? Is there value here that's really important to me that's at stake? If so, maybe more my life should be like this, exciting and thrilling. How do I shape a career around something like this? So it's really understanding your feelings and understanding your emotions and understanding your thinking and understanding your values, knowing what do I care about? Should I care about these things? Are these things good for me? Values are things you act to gain or keep. It doesn't mean they're good or bad. It's just they're things. Now you have to decide, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Is this going to send me to jail? Is this going to send me to the hospital? Is this something that's going to allow me to thrive in life and be successful? There's things that allow you to thrive in life. Those are the good. The things that send you to hospital, those are the bad. Now shape your life around the good. But those are all things that actually require work. They actually require thinking. They require introspection. And it's what Ayn Rand talked about when she talked about man has the capacity to shape his own soul.
Right.
You have the capacity to make you into what you want to be. And you need to take the material you have and then fine tune it to make you the best you that you can be. And that's what life should be about. That's what morality should be about. And that's what introspection should be geared towards, is integrating your thoughts and your values and making sure your values are consistent with reality, consistent with your own well-being. And If you can focus your life, if you can spend significant amount of time in your life oriented towards that, and make, then you'll live a much better, much more successful, much happier life than if you just, if you drift, you're likely to land up unhappy. And I think most people in our society drift. Most people in our society don't give their life much thought. And as a consequence, we have a lot of unhappiness. We have a lot of loneliness. We have a lot of deaths of despair and things like that. I mean, the real emphasis is, should be on, what does it take to get you to flourish, to be successful? Yeah. That's where the real hard work needs to be. Yeah. Right? We all know it'll take me to hospital. We all know that like certain drugs are not good for you. You shouldn't snort that cocaine. It's not going to be good for you in the long run. Some people can't resist anyway, but they know it deep down.
Yeah.
What really requires work, effort, and focus and energy is what's going to lead me to be successful in life. And that's where the work should be.
Yeah, I mean,
really be focused in.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like it is something that is very simple for everyone to do, but when you actually sit down to do it, there are a lot of aspects to it that you really need to think about, because you may write down 100 things that make you happy, but do they really make you happy? That's another level of introspection. But you know, I want to focus on your answer where you said you think about what makes you anxious and what makes you excited. And I want to bring that a little bit into the work environment. When I think about anxiety and excitement all put together, I think about work. And I think about all the tech jobs that everybody has today. The place where you can get the most anxious and the place where you can get the most excited is at work, if you ask me. So what would you say is the best way to balance one's emotions while they're also introspecting at work? I find myself a lot of times, like, you know, I have a day in the office, I come back home, and I'm always thinking about, like, could this conversation have gone better? Is there something better that I could have done? Or is there something better that I could have done to make the environment more psychologically safe? And those kinds of things. So, but it's all, you know, like we talk about sitting down and introspecting, but when you're in the situation, it's all like miles per minute, right? You can't really think about it as well and be in the situation as well, experiencing it. So what's the best way to balance both? Like to be in the situation and to, you know, think about the situation carefully.
Well, at the end of the day, what you want is to have enough practice and to really think through your behaviors so that over time you automatize the good behavior and you undo the bad behavior so that you trust yourself in the moment to just do the right thing or something similar to the right thing because, you know, you've done it so many times and you've thought about it so many times. So I think you're right in the sense that what you want to do is you want to think over your day. You want to think about what you did right and what you did wrong. You want to try to figure out why you did what's wrong, what triggered you, what got you triggered to do something wrong, to get angry, to get anxious, to get upset, whatever. And try to figure out why that triggers you. Think about, should it trigger you? Why should you ever be triggered? Why should another human being have that impact on you? And then you know, really think about what would have been other ways I could have handled it. Yeah. What could be other ways I could have handled it, even if I was triggered, right? You don't have to let your triggering actually manifest in action. Yeah. You can suppress it for the moment, take note of it, and deal with it later. So all of that, so like everything in life, it requires thinking, analyzing, figuring out, coming up with alternatives, and then practicing those alternatives, seeing if they work, and then trying to automatize the best behaviors so that's what happens in the future. And of course, like, you know, a lot of times psychologists can really help. I'm very pro, you know, engaging with psychologists when they're good, because it's their profession. It's what they're supposed to help us with, both introspection and how to deal with triggers and our emotions and everything else. But sometimes you can do it yourself, and it's definitely worth the effort to get to the point where you don't have to go home every night and think, oh God, what did I do? Because you're doing the right thing because you've worked at it, because you've put in the effort to do the right thing. You know, managing people is maybe the hardest job in the world, and because it's other human beings, and it requires the same kind of thinking as an engineering problem requires. It just requires sitting down and figuring it out.
So staying on course with workplace, I was listening to you on the Ben Shapiro show and on Lex Friedman. And I want to bring that a question that you guys were talking about in terms of the difference between experiencing something, a situation versus living a situation, part that you talk about on the Lex Friedman show, into work. Like, I see a lot of people who tell me, oh, are you happy? No, maybe not. When I was asking someone, what is something that stands out to you in the last 10 years, they weren't able to celebrate the wins that they ended up having. Is that a consequence of them not experiencing what what they had achieved, they just merely lived through it and they just moved on to the next action item that they had to go focus on.
I think it is not experiencing what they've achieved, but and I think there's a real common prevalent reason for not experiencing it. And that is that we're taught not to experience it.
Yeah.
You know, a whole moral code that dominates the Western world is a moral code of altruism. It's a moral code that says what's really important in life is other people. What's really important in life is their happiness, their success, their prosperity. So we're very good at complimenting and patting people on the back and feeling happy for them. But when somebody as a kid is excited about their own achievement, is excited about pursuing their own values, is excited about their own life, they're called selfish, they're put down, you think about yourself too much, and we repress it and we deny it to ourselves. And yet that's upside down. Yeah. The essence of morality should be to teach you how to live well, how to live for you well, how to achieve your own happiness. And that requires not only setting goals and achieving them, but recognizing that achievement, identifying it, in a sense, patting yourself on the back. It requires pride. So in Ayn Rand's morality, pride is a virtue. In Aristotle, pride is the queen of all virtues. It is the manifestation of being a virtuous person is pride. Pride is the achievement of success, the achievement of virtue, the achievement of a good life. Yeah. And you want to seek pride. Pride is not something that just happens to you. You want to seek it through trying to be as good as you can be, trying to be the best that you can be. Yeah. But you have to have a realization that, hey, I'm good. You have to be willing to recognize it. And that's how you gain self-esteem. I am competent. I am able. This is my world. I can live in this world. I can attain happiness. This is all good. And that is where happiness and success comes from. And so many people know that they're supposed to achieve goals. So they set goals, they achieve the goals, and then there's another goal. And they might be after money, they might be after other things, but they never take the time to enjoy. They never take the time to recognize. They never take the time to experience the self-esteem. They never take the time to experience the pride that comes from achieving your goal. And without that, life just becomes a rat race and it's meaningless. So you have very, very successful people. And this is super sad. Very, very successful people who are not happy.
Yeah.
Who are just not happy. And it's just, wow. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I can understand unsuccessful people not happy. They don't deserve happiness in a sense. But happiness should come with success. But the reason they're not is because they don't allow themselves, because it's immoral to fully experience it, to fully live it, to fully internalize it, their success.
You know, actually, I love that Karthik asked this question, and I loved your answer as well, specifically parts of it where you spoke about people really don't pat themselves on their back. And sometimes I think there are environments where patting yourself on the back and being confident to say that I am the right person to do this is seen very differently, right? Is seen as a way as you marketing yourself way more than, or like, you know, trying to get a leg up on other folks and things like that in a very competitive environment. So I've seen a lot of people not do that because they feel like they will be judged for doing it. So I really like your answer that you really have to think about it and you have to do it, you know, because you put in the work for it. But
you deserve it, and you have to recognize that you deserve it. And if you don't recognize that you deserve it, then you know that's where you falter.
You know, I want to bring my next question around trust and what you said about trusting yourself. But I want to take it in a different direction about trusting. And you spoke about managing people as well, right? So trusting other people to do the work that you think that you're doing well, right? The first thing is for me, when I had to do that, I found delegation very, very difficult because I would just do the job and I'd be like, this takes 5 minutes rather than getting someone to do it. But then overall, I would be spending more than 2 hours doing the job almost every day rather than spending that 2 hours training someone who could have done it. So how do you really, what is the, you know, what is the most important aspect to developing that trust in other folks? And then the second part to this question, and I don't want to have two-part questions, but I feel like I need to club this together, is that when you're managing a bunch of different people, you have all these different emotions that are clashing with each other, that are all in play, all valid. How do you develop that environment of psychological safety where people can be themselves? And as a manager, how do you manage those emotions?
Well, I mean, a few things. One is you've got to hire well, right? You've got to, and you've got to trust yourself in terms of the hiring.
Yeah.
You've got to do a good job hiring, and then, you know, and learn, right? Again, this whole idea of learning from experience, right? We're not going to get it right. We're not going to be good managers to begin with.
Yeah.
It's going to take time maybe to become a good manager and become a good hirer. But you're willing to learn. You're willing to experiment. You're willing to try things out and learn from it. So I think, I think that's important. Hire well, hire people you can trust.
Yeah.
And then accept failure. You've got to accept that you're going to fail. And if you're going to fail, then you've got to accept that your reports will fail.
Yeah.
And you've got to embrace the idea of failure. If the more you fear failure, the more you obsess about not failing, the more you set yourself up for a bigger failure overall. And, you know, so delegate, teach your delegates that failure is okay. I mean, not stupid failure, but up to a point, failure is okay. They shouldn't, and that you will give them a second chance or whatever. It's not infinite. You're not giving them carte blanche to do anything. But that they should feel confident that they will be heard and that they will have an opportunity to be successful. And, you know what, that's all you can do. So, and then you have to, if you can't trust somebody, why are they working for you? Why are you hiring them? Fire them. So, you know, and that's the one thing most managers are not very good at. It's firing people. You got to fire people and you got to fire them fast. So if it's clear that you can't work with somebody, then don't work with that person, because it's bad for you and it's bad for them and it's bad for the company. It's bad for everybody. But the only, it's good for your emotions. You don't have to, you know, the anxiety of firing somebody is gone. But other than that, it's not good for anything. So let people go fast. It's one of the things great managers do. They figure out when somebody's not a good fit and they let them go and they do it in as friendly and as positive a way as possible.
I love that you spoke about, like, you know, the fact that failure is something that you should be able to accept, right? Before this interview, I read an article, actually right before, which is very coincidental. I read an article that said, are you introspecting on your failures and asking yourself, was this failure successful? And I think that's a very good question to ask. Like, what did you learn from the failure? And are you going to move forward from it?
Absolutely. I mean, people who don't learn from failure are not going to be successful in anything in life. I mean, we're all going to fail in our romantic life. We're going to fail in our work. We're going to fail in different things, in different interactions. And you have to learn from them. You have to learn from them and get better and keep improving and keep getting better at things. And you'll fail less, or your new failures will be new and you'll learn from them. So, I mean, think career-wise. Think about all the unbelievable highs, but then all the lows that Steve Jobs had. I mean, or anybody, almost every entrepreneur. Or think about how quickly Amazon, particularly with Bezos, kills products. Right? Remember the Amazon phone? Almost nobody remembers the Amazon phone because they killed it so quickly that almost now nobody remembers it, because it was obvious it was failing. They killed it, right? So, but don't be afraid of that failure. Just be very alert to when it happens, know when to kill it. And the same with employees, know when to move on from somebody and do it quickly.
So you talk about managers having a tough time firing talent when they know that it is an obvious problem. How much of this is the value system not correctly programmed or embedded in them that is preventing them from doing what they ideally should be doing?
I think it's a combination of things. I think there are a variety of different things. One is, it could be a lack of the just a proper methodology of hiring, and not knowing exactly what you're looking for, not knowing exactly what you want out of a person. So that's certainly one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is just experience. Again, you need to learn and figure out. Reading people comes easier to some people and harder for other people. People put on their best face in an interview, and it's not always their true face in an interview. Yeah. And getting around that and learning how to interview well and learning kind of the tricks of the trade, if you will, and how to do that. All of that, none of that is easy. And if you want to be a really good manager, if you want to hire well, you have to really invest in figuring it out and learning about it.
So I'm going to ask a question that I borrowed from one of your interviews. So if someone says they lived a good life, what principles did they follow to lead a good life and a happy life?
Well, I mean, I think in order to live a good life, I think you have to be fundamentally rational. You have to be fundamentally somebody who thinks through and thinks before they act, figures stuff out, analyzes things, and then acts on them. So it's not at the expense of action, but in order to act, think and think rationally. That is, accept reality, accept facts. The biggest sin you can commit as a human being is to evade. It's to ignore reality. It's to pretend it doesn't exist. And people do it all the time. They pretend reality doesn't exist, and they pretend what they're seeing isn't there, and treat your emotions as great experiences, but not as tools of cognition. You don't act based on your emotions; you act based on your reason. So and that's why introspection becomes so important. And then I think that people who I know have been successful at living have careers that they love and are very successful at those careers, pursue those careers, are engaged in those careers. So think, be productive, pursuit of a real career. And again, that career could be multiple careers, but it has to be something you love and enjoy doing. You spend most of your time at work in life. So do it right. People talk about the most important thing to them is family. Reality is you spend more time at work than you do with your family. Yeah. So I would suggest the most important thing to you is work. If family was the most important thing, why don't you spend more time with them? So through our actions, I think we portray what's really important to us. And, so focus in on that. Have great relationships that includes love and romance and other people, but make sure that they are just, that you treat people the way they deserve to be treated, and you don't hang out with bad people, and you don't give of yourself to bad people, but you also don't deny yourself good people, that you try to seek out good people, and you make an effort to be their friends. Be honest with yourself and with people around you. So live a life of integrity, but integrity to values that are consistent with reality, consistent with life, consistent with a rational way of living. So to me, and that, requires self-esteem. All of this ultimately leads to self-esteem, to be good. You have to be committed to rationality. You have to have a career, and you have to have self-esteem. Those are the three primary things you have to have. They're not what ifs, but the things that you have to. Yeah. So though I would say those would be the main idea for living a good life, the main requirements.
That's a great answer. And I think Karthik is starting to plagiarize your questions a little bit there. But, I feel like you're on 45 minutes is not enough with you, but that's what we've been, we've scheduled for. But there are a few questions that I want to ask you towards the end. One of the things that we've been doing with our podcast is, like, we ask our experts to ask one question to the next expert that's coming on, not knowing who they are. And, that's something that we want to do with you as well. And after this, I'm going to ask you the question that our previous expert asked for you. And it just turns out that whatever the previous expert asked is the last question that we always ask our experts. Do you have a question for our next expert?
Yes, I would ask a similar question to what I was asked a minute ago. And that is, I think it's worth asking every expert. Yeah. What do you attribute your success to?
Yeah.
Where does the success come from? What behaviors? that you engaged and led to you being so successful?
Okay. So now we're going to turn this back around to you, because that is the exact same question that our previous expert asked for you. And that's the question that we usually ask all our experts at the end. So what is your definition of success?
Well, my definition of success is the achievement of my values. So whatever my values at the time happen to be, but you know, for me, enjoying my career, enjoying the things that I do, making a living so that, you know, I can live the kind of life from a material perspective that I want to live, you know, having a loving relationship with my wife and being a successful at marriage, if you will, and having, you know, having the time and dedicating the space to kind of pursuing, you know, the kind of spiritual values that I love, which is art and music and things like that. So to me, success was having the kind of life that can balance all of that, you know, your family, your career, and understanding the central role that career has, and all your other needs, your physical needs and your material needs, and being able to have ambitious values around every one of those and achieving them. You know, if you're not ambitious, you're not going to be successful. If you're not ambitious, you're not going to be happy. Happiness comes from having ambitious values and achieving.
Amazing.
I think I saw that's a great answer. And I think I saw Kartik come a little bit closer to the screen when you said being successful in marriage, because he's going to take that step pretty soon here.
That's good.
Thank you.
So, congratulations.
So thank you so much for coming on the show, Yaron.
My pleasure.
I mean, we've learned so much, and I feel like it was a great conversation to go back and forth on what all of us have learned in our different career journeys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you so much.